This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm hoping the Big Ten has to modify their system for us.
Probably like getting grade 10 sandpaper rubbed on your face every day.
I mean, we say it all the time, whether, you know, there's two types of turds, you're a sinker or you're a floater, but you're still a turd, right? I mean,
we are about players and players playing the plays and not necessarily the plays.
Welcome to the Varsity Club Podcast. My name is Derek Peterson. Joining me this week is Hail Varsity's Jacob Padilla. Jacob, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Derek. How about you?
I am good. We are also joined by Hail Varsity's Aaron Sorensen, who can now hear colors and see sound waves like Monica Rambeau from WandaVision. Aaron, how are you?
Good, but I have not yet heard from Bill Gates, so my microchip is not yet fully functional. Waiting on that. I'm vaccinated, though, which is exciting. So Bill Gates, give me a call. I'm still waiting. How does this thing work?
You have to wait 96 hours.
Okay.
And then you are contacted. Then you're contacted. It'll be like a little heads up display thing that pops up in your right pupil.
Perfect.
You'll see it.
I'm looking forward to it.
The transition has begun. We'll get the stuff out of the way in the open this week. This podcast is one of many in the Herd App Media Network and the Hail Varsity Network. You can subscribe to the I-80 Preview Podcast with Brandon Vogel, which may or may not be coming back sometime soon. The Straight Up Breakdown Podcast with Greg Smith, the Mind Your Own Podcast with our very own Aaron Sorensen and Sasha Durkin. Special props to Sasha for producing this show every single week. And the Nebraska Preps postgame show with Jacob Padilla and Damon Benning. Also, if you guys have not already, make sure that you're signed up for a Hail Varsity subscription. The yearbook is just around the corner. And this latest issue, which will be hitting newsstands soon, is one I think few people will expect and everyone will love. Aaron has a story in there that's wonderful. So go to hailvarsity.com/subscribe. It's a lot of crap to get out of the way, but if you were just to take a solid hour on a Friday, do it while you're at work, eat up the last hour on the clock, take an hour and go to subscribe to a few podcasts and sign up for the magazine, good things will come to you. You guys, I started last week's podcast with Brandon Vogel with an absurd hypothetical, and I think I would like to make that a semi-regular thing here on this podcast. First, did either of you listen to last week's hypothetical?
Yes.
Okay.
I am really behind on my podcast. I typically listen in the days following, and I am really behind. So I need to catch up. I have not heard it yet.
Well, you've been vaccinated, so you have a reason here, a realistic reason.
True,
here.
But like I typically listen on my drives to and from Lincoln, and I missed one this week by being vaccinated.
Yeah.
So I am behind about 4 days on all my podcasts.
There you go. It's fine. Well, Jacob at least kind of knows the tenor of this. It's going to be absurd. I have it's a proposition for you. Jacob, we'll start with you and then I'll switch the teams and we'll go to Aaron. The Phoenix Suns and the Green Bay Packers will win the next 4 consecutive NBA and NFL titles. Teams have three-peated in basketball, but I don't think anyone in modern basketball has won 4 in a row. And then a couple franchises, including your Packers, have won 3 in 4 years, but I don't think anybody has won 4 Super Bowls in 4 years. I don't think. Feel free to fact check me, anybody that's listening. So your 2 professional teams will make history at the same time. You will have 4 years of just complete and utter dominance over professional football and professional basketball. And you will be able to just give Greg and myself hell for 4 years as you guys run roughshod through the rest of the leagues. But the trade-off is that after those 4 titles are finished, you have to watch 20 consecutive years of sub 400 football and basketball, and you are not allowed to swap allegiances. After the 24 years here are up, your teams go back to normal. They go back to standard operating procedure. Would you take that deal?
Whew, that is really tough. 20 years is a long time. So the ability to talk trash to you and Greg makes this an even tougher, the fact that you brought that up and mentioned that, because that would be wonderful. But I'm a person that enjoys just watching the games, and I enjoy watching a good team. And the last 10 years of being a Phoenix Suns basketball fan has not been enjoyable.
It's been enjoyable for us. We get stories of goats defecating. It's been enjoyable for us.
Yeah. Well, I don't care about you. I would not take that. I would not take that deal. I've never been the wins above everything. All that. I've never been that kind of fan. I enjoy watching good sports. I enjoy watching my teams have success. And I guess we don't know what the alternative is here. I'd probably just take my shot at either one of those teams winning a chip somewhere in there, and then being consistently good and fun to watch over the next 2.5 decades versus guaranteeing myself into 20 years of losing.
Yeah, this one is particularly interesting for you because it's not sub 500 ball, it's sub 400 ball. So you'd be watching some bad teams. And I know for you in particular, that would drive you insane.
And with the thing with the Packers is there have been a couple bad years here and there. With Rodgers gotten hurt at the very end when Rodgers first got in there and they were kind of rebuilding. They've had a couple losing seasons, and even when Rodgers did get hurt, they made it in there somehow at sub 500 or whatever. That was a weird year with that tie in there, but Packers have never been bad. During the time that I've watched them, really, when I first got started as a Packers fan, they weren't great, but as I got older and basically the entire time that I've been closely following and old enough to comprehend and follow it closely, they've been good. And most of the time it's been Aaron Rodgers. So we'll see what the post Rodgers life is like. But yeah, that would be really tough, going from consistently good to great every single year almost to just nothing and
just trash
to being a Cleveland Browns fan. That would be tough.
Take shots at Sheamus in here.
He's not going to listen to this. But so yeah, that, and then the Suns, again, the fact that I've gone the last decade of watching what you've described basically. And now I've gotten to this point where they've kind of pulled themselves out of that. And it's really fun watching what I'm watching now. And we haven't even gotten to the playoffs. This is the most enjoyable season as a basketball fan I've had in a long, long time. So the fact that it's 82 games over an entire, however many months the season is, I think that that would be really tough to swallow for 20 years of that, knowing you're not going to get out of that, even if, and championship would be great, but one of my, the Packers won a championship with me as a fan. That was awesome. It doesn't impact my daily life. And I wasn't in Green Bay. I didn't get to go to a Super Bowl parade thing, whatever, kind of build those kind of memories. So it was just kind of awesome. It was really fun to watch. Absolutely loved it. It was fun kind of being the talk of everybody shortly after that. Then the next season started, we moved on, and they haven't gone back there since. So I think from that perspective, winning it all is awesome. That's what the goal is every single year, but I'm kind of more of a journey type of fan, I guess.
That's fair. Aaron, I'm going to switch to you. And because you have not listened to last week's podcast, I'm actually going to change your hypothetical on the spot here. It's not going to be sports related. Well, kind of. On January 1, every new year, you will have $1 million direct deposit into your bank account every year for the rest of your life. But in exchange for that, Michaela Fecky will find you randomly throughout the year, once a year, and you will get blasted by a Michaela Fecky swing. Do you take that deal? Yes or no?
So here's the fear that I have is how much is the plastic surgery going to cost to make up for what she has done to my face? Because that's going to offset that $1 million very, very quickly. Here's what I would say. I've often said that I would not want to be on the other side of the net from Lauren Stibbrins. And I feel that way about Michaela Fecky as well. There are a lot of people, mostly men, who, when I make that comment on Twitter, is like, oh, I would totally take a shot. Like, oh, she can come at me and I'd be fine. I could do it. And those are the same people that get called to like go square up against Serena Williams and get completely smoked and find themselves surprised that they're as good as they are. I would probably have my nose broken more times than I need to like care to admit. Honestly, no, I don't really want to like be in that much physical pain that often to like think of how I would get like, I don't think people realize I have been hit in the face by a volleyball numbers of times. And I guess you're not implying, but I'm just feeling like her aim is good enough that
right, it could be anywhere. It could be anywhere. You could be sleeping and she could jolt you awake by smashing a volleyball into your chest or rib cage.
Oh God, that would also hurt really bad.
Right. Yeah.
I'd probably but, say no.
I mean, you could bank like 5 years, like you could bank $5 million and then you could use that on the plastic surgery or build yourself like a Tony Stark level suit to just shield yourself from her. There's nothing in the rules preventing that.
But then I'd have to have that with me at all times because this is completely like I have no idea. So like basically I'm walking around as Iron Man all the time out of like preparation for her until she decides to like attack me, which would be always on like December 31st, because then I would have to also go through everything to not. No, I don't really want to get, I don't really want to be live my life in fear of Michaela Fecky. So I'm going to say no, I'm not going to take the $1 million, which seems insane because I should, but no, I just don't want to be that. I don't want to be harmed. And I would be like so scared all the time. Like I would be terrified every day, all day, like just absolutely terrified. So
she could wait until like December 1st. So you live your entire year in fear.
December 31st.
You have like 29 days of being like, okay, it's not going to happen. And then January 1 hits, the direct deposit hits and you're like, yay. And then you remember, oh,
yeah. The amount of anxiety and stress that would add to my life on top of how many times I'd probably have ribs broken, my nose broken. Like, I don't want to get gruesome here. People really should never look up volleyball injuries. You should look up most injuries. Like, don't spend your time on the internet doing that. But like, people have had like their eyeballs like basically like popped, essentially. I don't even think I'm saying that correctly, but you know what I'm talking about, where it like basically like a blood vessel pops because they've gotten hit so hard. Like,
gross.
There are like really gross injuries that happen in volleyball just because head on a swivel, which is part of like when people are like, you don't seem to care so much when you're on the sidelines at a football game. And I'm like, I certainly should more, but I feel less concerned in like that environment. It feels like my odds are lower that I'm going to obviously get hit on the sidelines without like seeing the person coming at me or getting hit by a football. Volleyball is one of those things where you just can't predict. You cannot ready yourself for that until it's just coming right at you. And when like someone like Nicklin Hames takes a shot straight to the face and then just bounces up, like, I'm fine. I'm like also now terrified of Nicklin Hames because like, she is not a human. Like that is not a human thing. That is not a human reaction.
She like immediately bounced back up too. And like had a smile on her face. And I was like, wow.
I'm like, she for sure has a concussion, didn't have a concussion. Obviously you have to go through concussion protocol, but I'm like,
it was a real life Scott Sterling moment with her. It was incredible.
Yeah. So no, I can't take the money because I can't live my life in fear. And also I don't want to have to like be constantly like repairing my body.
The head on the swivel thing.
Yeah. I was going to say that's the trade-off where kind of covered volleyball the last, I don't even know how many years it is now, but 3 years at Creighton, we were courtside for those games at Sokol Arena. And I was fortunate enough that my laptop and my face never got hit by a stray volleyball, but I've seen it happen. And so that's a trade-off. It's nice being closer to the action, like was at Creighton, but here at Nebraska, you're up in the media section where you're not as close, but you're definitely much safer up there.
Well, Jacob, mm-hmm. you and I went to the Final Four in Minneapolis two yep. or 3 years ago, whenever that was. And I don't know if you remember this, but like I had an irrational fear of getting blasted right, with the ball the entire time we were there. This is why I don't go to baseball games, because I wouldn't be able to enjoy the baseball game because or the company at the baseball game, because I would constantly be living in fear that a foul ball is going to seek me out.
At least you have a net.
The guy that caught it barehanded yeah. in the press box. Yeah. Yes, that was yeah. remarkable. But even when I told you, it's an irrational fear. Even when I'm behind the net, I'm still worried about it, that it's going to like pop up and like bounce off the roof or something of the press box and bounce back down and hit me in the head. Like I'm a naturally fearful person. And it's funny. My wife she stopped playing soccer because she played indoor soccer and did not have her head on a swivel and just got pelted right in the side of the face with a soccer ball that went through the little like 5x5 square in the wall. So
I don't think people realize like those things like volleyball. And we can dive into this. This actually works really well as we start to talk about volleyball. So we'll come back to this, but I'm just going to say, I don't know how many times I hear somebody who is like, you know, why is that person not a better passer? Why are they not better at digs? Why are they not this and this? And I'm like, do you realize what's coming at that person a lot of the times? Like to be on the other end of a Stiverin slide is not just this thing of like, be better. The people who are incredibly good at that, like Kenzie Maloney, are good at that because they're good at that. Like there are just certain people who like over time and experience, but also just being naturally good at a position, get really good at something. But that doesn't make it easy. I sometimes think people like look at those positions and go, oh, I could do that. By all means, I would love to set up when COVID is not a thing and you can be on the other side of that. Let's set it up. Let's have a couple of Stiverin slides come your way and let's see how you fare. Because I do not think people realize.
I think athletes in baseball and volleyball have the best reflexes. Anybody else can feel free to come at me or argue with me on that. I mean, that'd be a fun argument. I think those two sports have athletes with the best reflexes. Listeners, if you have an absurd hypothetical, send it to me and we'll read it on the podcast. Let's talk volleyball, which we haven't already. Yeah, let's talk Nebraska volleyball. Nebraska season came to an end Monday night in the regional finals against number 4 seed Texas. I hated it. I watched it from the gym as Texas just kind of ran away from with the third and fourth sets. And as an ardent hater of Texas athletics, I hated every second of it. There were a couple moments where it looked like Nebraska might be like heating up, getting ready to start rolling. But by and large, they looked off. Coach John Cook said after the match, per your reporting, Jacob, which everyone should go read on HailVarsity.com. Coach Cook said that he felt that this team was better than the 2019 team, but both seasons ended in the same place. So, Jacob, we'll start with you. What happened on the court Monday? Why did Nebraska ultimately bow out?
I think it was a lot of the same problems that cost them last year and why they bowed out of the tournament in this round a year ago. And last year it was serving and passing. They did not put nearly enough pressure on Wisconsin from a serving perspective, because typically the serve and pass is what John Cook builds his program on. And last year's team was uncharacteristically poor in those areas compared to what we're used to seeing. Serving particularly, they weren't, their assists, their aces to errors ratio was way off. They had young servers that just weren't ready for that stage. And this year, I thought they improved quite a bit in both areas. I thought they served pretty well, but they dominated the service points because Texas was incredibly error prone with their serves. And I think it was 9-3 Nebraska aces to errors. And I thought even when they didn't get errors, Nebraska had some good serves. But Texas was so good passing. They covered up so many balls that it didn't look like they should be able to get back in system from. And Nebraska, on the other hand, was losing kind of just standard shots. They weren't able to pass well. And Nicklin Hames was running for her life, trying to get underneath the ball. And a lot of times Nicklin was the one digging the ball and having to have somebody else set the ball. So they were out of system quite a bit. And so that's what it ultimately came down to. I mean, all you have to do is look at the sets, the set distribution. That'll tell you everything that you need to know about this match. Logan Eggleston, Texas's stud, got 53 sets. And their opposite hitter, Skylar Fields, had 27 come her way. And those two had 18 kills apiece. You look at Nebraska, and Nebraska's best player is Lauren Stibbins. She got 14 sets. And obviously there's some kind of injury stuff in there. Lauren wasn't quite at full strength, I don't think. And then Lexi Sun is your other best hitter. She had 24 sets. And Kayla Caffey, the other middle blocker, only got 14 sets. So that's 28 total sets for your middle blockers, which tells you they weren't in system. They weren't on balance enough to get the ball where they wanted it to go. When you're out of system, you just kind of throw it up in the direction of one of your outside hitters and let them go get it. And Maddie Kubik led the team with 39 sets. And she had 15 kills, but hit 256. So that's solid, not extraordinary. And they didn't really have anybody else that got going. And I think that was why, because they just weren't able to operate their offense nearly the same way that they did the day previous against Baylor. So that's ultimately what cost them, was the passing, I think. And again, they improved a lot in some of these areas, but they just weren't able to play their best in the biggest match of the season. And I think part of that was probably what you mentioned there, is Nebraska was not nearly as battle tested as a lot of the other teams in the tournament. And they just weren't quite ready to play their best when they needed to.
I just wanted to say, if anyone listening to this, I've seen a couple of these questions come through mostly throughout the season when I would take over for Jacob, from some of my followers. So if you are not completely aware of what being out of system means in volleyball, it basically means that the team is not digging or passing well, and it's limiting the setter's options. So what Jacob is talking about when he says, you know, you're looking at Lauren Stibbins, understood that she had some limitations with her injury, but when you're looking at the different hitters and what they're getting, the distribution, you can tell, again, like Jacob was saying, that like Nicklin's options as far as setting were really, really limited. Now, when you watch how Texas was doing, their setter just seemed really at ease all throughout that match. She was setting the ball exactly where she wanted to, when she needed to, whereas there was times, and they're a little bit more obvious in this moment, but like, for instance, Nicklin was setting sometimes almost out of the net. Now, she's incredibly good at what she does. She is kind of like, okay, how many times have we said in football, an offensive line or a quarterback can like disguise a bad offensive line? If an offensive line is not incredibly solid, but the quarterback is just phenomenal, they can kind of trade that off. They can balance that out just a teeny bit. So that way, when that quarterback is gone, you suddenly start to realize, oh, yikes. I don't sometimes think people realize how good Nicklin Hames is. I think people get it, but I don't think they realize how solid she is unless you took her out. Because if you took Nicklin out of that game and put someone else in, I think it changes even more drastically. So when they're out of system, you're just limiting basically your team's options. And that's really, really key. And Nebraska has been out of system a lot this season, and it really came to a head against Texas. I mean, Texas was just taking advantage of Nebraska left and right, and Texas was in system pretty much the whole night. Like, Texas, I got to say, Texas's setter was just looked comfortable. She wasn't running for her life. She looked like she had all different kinds of options. I was watching with my fiance, and he kept saying, like, oh, she's, you know, doing all these back sets. She's doing all this cool stuff. That's what happens when you're in system and you have the option to do that. When you're in Nicklin's situation, you're just trying to make the best of what you have. And she does make the best of what she has. How about that one point where she basically drew the Texas defender over the net, knowing as long as she could get a play on it, if the defender came over the net, she would basically get a point called for Nebraska. That is really smart play, but that is also not how you can fully play a game. That's being smart in that moment, but it cannot be how your setter has to react every single time. And that was what Nicklin was doing. She was having to just, she was basically a track star. She was running everywhere against Texas, trying to get where she needed to. So if you are ever confused about out of system, that is basically it. You're not passing and digging well enough. So you're not setting your server up well. And that means ultimately you're limiting what you're able to do at the net. And especially when you're already down one of your best hitters, you're not winning a game like that.
Yeah. And I think it was that match, probably one of the highlights for Nebraska, kind of describe or illuminates what we're talking about here, is Lauren's setting to Nicklin, who sprinted over and swung back across her body for a down the line kill. Like, that was awesome, but that is not how it's supposed to work. That's not what you want. Like, great job for Nicklin for making the best of that situation, but your middle blocker should not be setting your setter and having her sprint to the pin to go get the ball. And that's just kind of where Nebraska was all game long. And you mentioned Nicklin, I think, was one of the more improved players on the team this year. Last year, I thought a lot of their issues weren't necessarily just the passing. I thought she missed sets a lot more often than she did this year. And I think her distribution was really good this year. They were more aggressive setting the middles all year long. And that's, I think, some Tyler Hildebrand influence there as well. And they've said that multiple players have talked about that. So I think Nicklin made some big strides this season, but in that match, there wasn't a whole lot she could do based on the situation she was given.
There are a few people that you could put on a level with Kelly Hunter as far as setting at Nebraska, and Nicklin has started to put herself into that conversation in the 2020, 2021, whatever this season is. She is making a case for herself to be in contention with a name like Kelly Hunter. And I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here. I'm just saying, I agree with Jacob. I think she was one of the most improved on this team. And you could tell when she got a good pass, she's great at knowing where things need to go. She's also really, really good at knowing where she can be aggressive. And she's so fun to watch. It'll just be something where I would love to be able to watch her when Nebraska's in system, because for anyone who is like impressed by her right now, it maybe feels boring because it's like, oh, it's everything you expect. But when it's in system, she's going to be so fun to watch because she will be able to do so much more. That's the thing that I hope Nebraska can get to, because she deserves that as a setter. She could have a lot of fun, especially if any of those seniors come back.
And I think it's worth noting here that a lot of those passers, we're still young. You had Kenzie Knuckles as a sophomore, Maddie Kubik as a sophomore. You had Kayla Akana as a true freshman. Those are 3 a-year players in that back row that played a lot of the time back there. And so you would hope, just based on their youth and kind of the experience they've gained, you'd hope for a step forward next year from those players. And with the new players coming into the program, there's going to be some competition there as well. So the players, they're either going to improve or they're going to lose their jobs. So I think that's, you can hope for continued progression there, just based on the youth of the players involved, which is especially tough last year and this year a little bit as well. But now they've got that experience, so hopefully they'll improve moving forward.
Jacob, you have a notebook up from Tuesday in which you sort of spell out just the difference in the overall quality of the season, of the schedule that Nebraska was able to play this year. They have a 16-3 record overall, which if you look at their 2019 season, they played 20 conference matches as opposed to 19 overall matches. They played 33 matches total in the 2019 season. So we're talking about a season that's already nearly cut in half. And then on top of that, it was choppy. So they open with back-to-back matches on January 26th and 23rd, and then they don't play again until February 5th. They play for a few weeks, and then matches against Wisconsin, which probably would have helped them, gets canceled. So they have another break from February 21st to March 5th. Then their break between the end of their season, March 26th, and the start of their tournament run, April 15th. That break is super long as well. What kind of impact did just the choppiness of the year have? Was there an effect of just not playing as many matches? And then they also only played two ranked opponents before this tournament. Like what kind of, were those realistic things that you can look at and point to and say like, yeah, this is a reason why maybe they didn't have as great of a tournament performance as they were hoping for?
Oh, for sure. And I think that's a big part of what Cook was talking about afterward, where like, yeah, I feel like this team is better than it was a year ago, but this team didn't get enough matches to kind of become fully realized, to really learn about itself and figure out, all right, who are we as a team? Because you did face so few true challenges. You had the Wisconsin series canceled. You had the Penn State series canceled. Purdue wasn't on the schedule this year, on the reduced schedule. So that's the other seeded team from the tournament that you didn't get to see. So it was just Minnesota and just Ohio State. And they split both those series. And Cook talked about how much of a learning experience that loss to Ohio State was. And so they had that. And then you played, I think, Michigan, and then you had the week off, and then you had the 2 weeks off before the tournament. So it's just a tough place to be as a team where even with the amount of experience they had returning, they still had, they were playing a little different. They had some new players in key roles. So it was still a new team. And I don't think they had enough time to really kind of polish everything up, hammer everything down, and know exactly who are we in the big moments and the high pressure situations. How is everybody on this team going to respond? So they kind of had to, again, like you mentioned, they played 19 total matches this year, which is less than they would normally play in a conference season, let alone a non-conference and a tournament. So it is what it is. There are a lot of teams that had to deal with things just like Nebraska. So it's not necessarily a unique excuse, but it is disappointing that we weren't able to see kind of a full season of this team to be able to kind of learn and grow and get better as the season went on.
Yeah, and I want to add too, I think kind of going back to what Jacob was saying just a minute ago about how young like a lot of your defenders were, like when you think of Kenzie Knuckles, Kianale, Maddie Kubik, like that a quote unquote normal season would have served all of them much better than what you had this year, because especially when it comes to digging, a lot of that comes from experience. It just comes from playing and playing and playing. And you can replicate a lot of that in practice, but it doesn't really bring the same level of pressure and everything else until you're in that moment. When you are actually in the moment and you experience it and you have to have someone, you know, Nebraska was supposed to play Stanford. So when you have a team like that, that would have tested you in a situation that honestly wouldn't have mattered all that much if you dropped it, because you have the rest of your season ahead to work those kinks out. I think Nebraska one lost some of its best potential matchups to give that experience because of COVID in this like new season for 2021, whatever like this spring was. You don't have Penn State. You're not playing Wisconsin. Those probably would have provided really good opportunities. But now on top of it, like you don't even like get a it's like Jacob said, it's not unique to Nebraska. Certainly not. It's not an excuse. And I don't think John Cook would use it as an excuse, but it definitely doesn't help. It doesn't put you, it doesn't set your team up for success. And it's going to take the people who could have really, really used that time. And it's going to make it harder. Someone like Lauren Stiverins, she's been through this enough. She knows what it looks like. But I'd assume somebody like Kenzie Knuckles could have used an extra series or two to really like work on her game, but you just don't have that option. That's not what this year provided.
Jacob, any other thoughts?
No, I think she just kind of finished off kind of what I was talking about there. So
you had a strange season. So, I mean, like in some of the football stadiums that I was in, there were people in there. And it felt weird, obviously, because they weren't full stadiums, but there was still a good deal of people in there. For a while, you were covering matches where there was nobody. I guess like what was that like then to suddenly be inside CHI on Monday where there's an actual real home court advantage for the first time for this Nebraska team that has a really, really passionate fan base behind it? What was kind of that experience like after such a strange last year for you covering sports?
Yeah, it was definitely cool to see kind of all the red trickling in, and obviously they had to spread it out around the arena so you didn't necessarily get any kind of sea of red image or anything like that. But you looked around outside of one little section, you saw some burnt orange there, but it was basically all red the rest of the arena.
And I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to do that by the new college football points of emphasis ruling. So stupid.
Go ahead, give a horns down. Nobody's watching this.
Be careful because Texas might tweet about you. So just be careful.
Say one thing, and then 5 years later, it will still live in their dumb heads rent-free.
Even though none of the players on the team were her teammates.
Only one. There was one. Okay. Only one.
Who?
I looked it up the other day. I'll have to go back to their roster. It was literally one person on the team at the same time as her.
Gonna say, because I thought they only had one senior. I guess maybe somebody read. I thought they only had one senior, and it was a grad transfer.
Let me go double check. I swear, I thought it was one, but maybe my math and like roster matchups are hard. And also, Texas doesn't exactly like their roster was kind of confusing when I was looking.
It's amazing that Texas can throw shade and complain about something stupid like that when Texas is the reason that you can't do horns down in a football game anymore because of their sensitive butts. So Jacob, back to what you were saying.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So yeah, it was kind of interesting, like at the very start of the season, to see them experiment and try to figure out, all right, what's the best way to do this with the limited attendance where you had 100 or less fans. And I know the football players, boyfriends, friends kind of made their presence felt that first weekend, where they were getting a lot of heckling and some well-timed chants during the opposing team serving. So that was fun. And then after the first day, they added some music in between to try to get a little bit more noise in there, because they didn't want to go with the basketball weird crowd, fake crowd noise kind of track, which I appreciate them trying to do something besides that because that was awful.
It was terrible. It was, it was bad. So bad. It was very bad.
So bad. But
and yeah, it didn't go away. Like it was never one of those things where you're like, oh, after you're here for like five games, like suddenly you will not hear it. Your brain will tune it out. That didn't happen.
Well, yeah. And I had that break when I got COVID and missed a couple of basketball games. And then I came back and it started up. I was like, oh, that's right. They're still doing this. I did not miss this. But so yeah, it was nice to see that many people in there and just kind of hear the natural background noise of a college sports game. Unfortunately, Nebraska wasn't able to put itself in a position where the crowd could really swing things. I think you could, that kind of advantage, you could get 1 to 2 points. And if you come up into a close game situation, that could help you push over the top. But Nebraska wasn't able to hang with Texas enough to take it down to a tiebreaker type situation late in any of the sets. So that was unfortunate. I was up in the, if you've ever been to CHI Center, the kind of the hockey press box, we're way up in the rafters. So it was a little bit different. I don't quite know what it was like for the players on the court compared to what I was hearing up top. So we're separated quite a bit. So I kind of wonder how much the players heard and kind of what it felt like for them. I know Nick Van Haynes talked about it was great to have him back and how part of the sadness they felt was missing out on the chance to play for a national championship in front of those fans. And that was the first time they got to play in front of them all season. And it's kind of unfortunate that they had to go one and done with that, but it was good. I'm glad that they were able to at least get that one match this year where especially the seniors were able to hear their friends, family, and fans in general out there cheering for them.
Cook has said that scholarships will be honored for any senior that wants to return next season. Nebraska has Lawrence Stiverns and Lexi Sun mulling decisions, as well as Jazz Sweet and Haley Densberger. What do you think ultimately happens there, Jacob?
Yeah, I guess I'd be most surprised by Jazz Sweet returning, just based on how the season went for her, where she did lose her job and only got it back full time because of an injury to Riley Zune. And now you've got younger, talented outside hitters coming into the program where nothing's going to be given by default. And I just kind of feel like where she is as a player, where she got to at Nebraska, she kind of leveled off there late and didn't have a great season. And next year is going to be even tougher. So I would be surprised to see her return. Haley Densberger, as a walk-on, you never quite know what is going on there, kind of what she's hoping to do next. If she wants to pursue a master's degree, wants to pursue further education, and she's going to be sticking around, then why not be on the team another year? But I think what I'm going into this situation expecting is they're all going to move on. And then if any of them choose to return, it'll be kind of a bonus or a pleasant surprise. Lauren Stiverins is in her fifth year of college. She redshirted and kind of heard the stories about Lauren throughout her career. She's not the biggest fan of school. So I don't know that a sixth year of classes is something that would be interesting or of interest to her, especially if she has a chance to go make some money play in this game. I would imagine a player of her physical tools and talent should be able to find a job playing volleyball somewhere. So maybe with the way that she ended the season hurt and didn't get kind of the typical senior year, maybe that kind of pushes her towards coming back a little bit. But I think I'd be surprised at this point if she did come back for kind of all the reasons I laid out. But if she does, I think it'll probably be a little bit of what I talked about there at the end. Lexi, I think, is probably a little bit more likely. She's only been at Nebraska 3 years after spending that first year at Texas. She's a true senior this year. And I have to imagine kind of the way that last match went left a sour taste in her mouth. And it would be tough for that match where she hit zeros against her former team, for that to be your final college memory. That would be really tough. But also, if she's another player that I'm sure would have some professional opportunities if she wants to go pursue it. And who knows, maybe if they hurry up and get this NIL stuff done, maybe that offers another incentive to return, where we know obviously how popular those women are on social media and kind of some of the opportunities they'd have in that area if they return. So maybe if that gets done, it would be more enticing to return. But I think I'm kind of going into this not expecting any of them to be back.
Is Lauren working on her master's?
I don't know where she's at in her schooling, honestly. It's not really something they put on their bio, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah. And I would say too, I think the one part that I hold on to is the fact that what's interesting here over pretty much any other sport. So like, I can understand where like a baseball player from last year who was maybe weighing the odds of returning would then have to waiting nearly another like 8 months before a new season turns around. Like that's probably a little bit of that has to be a harder decision in my opinion. Then at least in this case, you're talking like 3.5 months, less time for like practice to begin, but like 3.5-ish months until a season would start over. And you're only talking the fall season. You're not having to wait through all the way to spring, which could be an incentive for someone like Lauren, who even if she doesn't like school so much is like, all right, it's just one more semester, maybe. But that I think is like further down on the list of reasons too. I just think it is a note worth saying that like at least it's only spring to fall, and it's not, like I said, like what baseball had to decide last year, any spring sport had to decide last year, is a full, like, you're having to go almost like 8 months before your season starts again. That would be tough. Like, I can understand people who are like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. But I also just want to throw this out there. I'm completely in agreement with Jacob. The person high on my list I think could return is Lexi Sun. And I could be totally just reading into all of this. But John Cook has like tweeted a lot about her. Now, the most recent tweets were in response to what Texas tweeted. He was being supportive on that. So I'm not reading into that. However, prior to the tournament and stuff, he was like talking, like he was like, you know, talking about his seniors, but like he was sharing more about Lexi. And I'm total conspiracy theorist. I'm like, what are you trying to tell us? Maybe you're just trying to recruit your own player to come back. I don't know. But it was something I at least picked up on. It probably means nothing. But as the resident conspiracy theorist, I just would like John Cook to know I'm reading into all of his tweets.
For the record, John did say he's not going to recruit any of them. His kind of thinking is, hey, if I have to recruit you now, then I'm going to have to recruit you closer to the season, and he's just not about that. So if they, that's he's going to welcome them back, but
you know me, I'm like, maybe he's just sending a little extra tweets like, hey, as a reminder, you can be great. I don't know. No, he's also the same person that will ask. I know another member of the media, Nicole shared a tweet of him basically saying, you see my tweet? He does that a lot where he asks us, have you seen my tweet? And if I'm ever on anything with him, he'll be like, Aaron's probably seen my tweet, which I don't know what that says about me. He'll be like, she probably knows, ask her. He literally for like a year made me the person where he's like, if you want the numbers, just talk to her. Yeah. I'm like, amazing. So
he does make an effort to call out, especially women in media, to kind of draw attention to them and kind of point out. And that's always kind of cool. You and Nicole, he's always making jokes with and calling out in press conference settings. So
yeah, John Cook is, I appreciate Jacob pointing that out because he is actually really awesome at he just wants more media in general, more people who will show up for his team. He's like all for it, like whatever you it doesn't matter, show up, cover his team, he loves it. But he does make a big point of celebrating the women who show up to cover his teams as well, and I when there's not a lot of us, it does feel nice to be like, thank you for appreciating us as well. So he I imagine that is how he treats his players in the locker room and beyond. So you see, when we talk about, if you ever want to know how like a team is run, it all starts with your head coach. So if you ever want to look at it, and so John Cook, I think, is one of the best.
John Cook for NCAA president. Or something.
It would certainly be run better.
Or something more local in the near future, maybe.
As we know, I love a good conspiracy theory. So
Aaron is on to John Cook's racket. So if he's listening to this podcast, which when I'm he sees that you. Jacob Manila is on it, he might listen to it. And Aaron too. He might have to listen to it. Just know, John, Aaron's on to you.
I'm watching the tweets. I'm reading into them. I'm doing the Taylor Swift thing where I'm taking all the capital letters. I'm putting them together. I'm just kidding.
On that note, I will let you guys get out of here. You probably both have work to do. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was insightful listening to you guys talk about in system, out of system, for somebody like me that is not as knowledgeable in the sport. And it was fun, entertaining conversation. So thank you for coming on.
Yeah, that's what John Cook calls volleyball 101 type of discussion.
It's great. I love having those kinds of discussions. I hope that we can get to a point with football where we are having football 101 conversations. Like if you've seen those videos that have been tweeted out where Nick Saban is talking about various concepts and what they would do versus these different fronts when they're shown defensively. I want those kinds of press conferences, not necessarily like, hey, what's your culture like? Yeah. Which, I mean, I was the guy that asked the culture question on day one, but we're still at that point. So hopefully we can get to a volleyball level here soon, which I'm sure a lot of people would be happy for.
And I have to point this out really quick. Jacob, when you started covering volleyball for Hill Varsity, was that the first time you took a full volley, like you took a beat fully for volleyball?
No, I covered volleyball my last 3 years at Creighton.
Okay. So, but still, you've been what, covering volleyball for a little over a decade then?
Yeah. So this is 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Yeah, about 9 years.
You're old.
Okay. So yes. I want to point this out. I just want to point this out because people do this a lot with women when they cover football or they cover a sport that's typically played by men. Now, I understand there's men's volleyball, but let's just, Nebraska only has a women's volleyball team. Jacob is probably one of the best in the business when it comes to covering volleyball. I often joke, I'll take the beat from him, like when he like lets me have it, and like no one wants that. Like Nate, the SID for volleyball, often like just laughs to appease me with that joke, but never actually like, he does not want me to replace Jacob. But no, we would be sorely, we would sorely miss Jacob on this beat. So like, if you are not reading his work when it comes to anything he does, but I just want to say with like volleyball, for somebody who has been covering the sport for 9 years, hasn't played it himself, there are few people who understand it as well as he does. And there are things that somebody who played volleyball, I still learn from Jacob. So I'm not trying to like toot your horn too much here, Jacob, but I do want to just throw that out there that like, I feel this way about both of you with basketball, by the way, but even like Derek with football, like I'm really always impressed by our staff. And Jacob, when it comes to your volleyball coverage, I hope people realize what we have, because it is really great to have somebody who understands and can break down volleyball in the way and be smarter after it. So like, read what Jacob puts out there with volleyball, because your option otherwise is me, and it's just going to be conspiracy theories about what John Cook tweets.
Just don't follow him on Twitter, because then you have to deal with a lot of Phoenix Sun stuff. She was saying too many nice things about you.
I was gonna say, so you thank you, Aaron.
Knock it down.
I'll acknowledge that part. Thank you, Aaron.
That's going to do it for this week. We'll be back next week with another podcast. In the meantime, keep reading HailVarsity.com. Listen to our shows. Listen to Christian Bent on the radio. Read Jacob Padilla's work. As Aaron said, I can co-sign on that. It's always excellent. It's always wonderful. Get the magazine. Aaron's got some work that, has, again, is always excellent, always wonderful. So thank you guys for coming on. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week.
A Huda Media Production.